I'm Liz Hirschnoff-Tolley, and welcome to the Capital Coffee Connection podcast. And today I have the pleasure of sitting down and speaking with Congresswoman Lauren Underwood, who I have been a fan of for quite a few years now. And she is a congresswoman from Illinois, and she has been in the House since 2018. And, you know, one of the things and the reasons why I started this podcast was to really get to talk to our elected leaders about their heart, their humanity, and to not really get bogged down in the politics and policy. Because what I was wanting to show is that a lot of our leaders are really beautiful people that are doing this work from their heart and really trying to make a difference. And so with that introduction, I want to welcome Congresswoman Underwood and say thank you for joining us. And I look forward to having this conversation with you.
Liz, thank you so much for having me. We've been talking about this for a little while now, and I'm so happy we could make it happen.
Well, thank you. So you are from Illinois' 14th Congressional District. And can you tell us a little bit about what that area encompasses and what cities and towns that you represent?
Illinois' 14th District is a suburban and rural community outside of Chicago. It's the community I grew up in. I live in a town called Naperville. It's a very large suburb. The district also includes pretty much all the city of Joliet, downtown Aurora, and then we go west. There is the highway I-80. And if you just head west on I-80 past a big state park called Starved Rock State Park, then you'll reach the far western portion of the 14th District, which includes Putnam and Bureau counties. So it's seven counties in northern Illinois: DeKalb, Kane, Kendall, Will, LaSalle, Putnam, Bureau.
Wow. Okay. So before we get into a little more about you, could you just tell me what's special about people from Illinois?
Well, I think people from Illinois are pretty special because, you know, we're Midwesterners and have that kind of flair on what it means to be an American. And we have great values like supporting our neighbors and showing up for one another and leading with kindness. But we're also close to a big city here in northern Illinois. And I grew up in the 90s. And so we knew we were champions. We knew we were the best. And that idea of growing up knowing that you're a winner, I think just really, maybe it was for a short period of time, you know, that decade, but it really put me on a path where I felt pretty fearless. And I think that there's so many that share that same attitude across our state.
Well, I love that. And I think you are fearless. And I mean, I know your story to becoming a congresswoman is that you had to work really hard. Could you tell us a little bit? And again, it doesn't have to do with being a Democrat or Republican. It's just the journey of what you as this young woman who felt very confident was able to accomplish, because I think others listening will be appreciating that there's always a possibility, even when things look like they might be against you.
Absolutely. So I'm a registered nurse, and I spent my career working to expand healthcare coverage in communities across our country. I worked to implement the Affordable Care Act at the federal level, so worked on things like private insurance reform and healthcare quality and Medicare and preventive services, which are like the free screenings and vaccines and contraceptive coverage. Basically, anything the Obama administration was getting sued on related to the ACA was in my portfolio, and I loved it. And then I joined the Obama administration to work on public health emergencies and disasters, like Ebola and the Flint water crisis. And I served until the very last day, but didn't want to help the Trump team take away healthcare coverage from people. So I decided to move home to Illinois. I began working for a Medicaid managed care plan in Chicago and went to a town hall that my congressman hosted in the spring of 2017 when the Congress was considering many different versions of Obamacare repeal.
Right.
Now, he stood in front of our community and said he was only going to support a version of repeal that let people with pre-existing conditions keep their healthcare coverage. So I'm a nurse. I had worked on the ACA, but I also have a pre-existing condition. I have a heart condition. It's called supraventricular tachycardia. And what it means is I have a rapid heart rate. And it was my early health experiences getting, you know, treatment for my heart condition that inspired me to go into nursing. But right. When I heard my congressman make that promise, it was really personal to me, and I believed him. And so I was really disappointed and angry when 2 weeks later he broke his word and he voted for the American Healthcare Act, which was a version of repeal that did the opposite. It made it cost prohibitive for people like me to get affordable coverage. And I got really upset and I said, you know what? It's on. I'm running. And obviously I had to figure out how to run for Congress.
Right.
But I was so inspired to take action as a result.
So, you know, it's interesting because like sometimes you wonder why people go into politics or why they go into leadership, and yours was like a natural progression, but it was something that upset you that got you actually motivated. And I know that you are also very focused on Black maternal health and that's been something that as a congressperson, you've been really passionate about. Can you talk a little bit about what got you to be there? Because I think that that's a very personal experience, but that it's made you as a leader really focused on that issue.
Sure. So I went to Hopkins for graduate school. I got a master's in nursing and a master's in public health. And the first day of my master's program, I met a woman named Shalon Irving. Shalon had already earned a doctorate. She was sociologist, gerontologist, but was really curious about public health. And so I enrolled in this master's program. And we stayed in touch, obviously. And when I was finishing up my time in the Obama administration, Shalon was preparing to give birth to her first child, a beautiful baby girl named Soleil. This was in like January 2017. And Shalon gave birth. And a couple weeks later, she died due to complications related to high blood pressure connected with her pregnancy. And it was devastating. I remember going to her funeral and Shalon was Lieutenant Commander in the United States Commissioned Corps. And it's also known as like the Public Health Service, she was stationed at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And so at the time, the director of the CDC came to her funeral. I remember sitting there and hearing this woman say, "I don't know how this could happen." And I was just like floored because we know exactly how this happens, because unfortunately, this story is not rare. It's not unique. Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die of pregnancy-related complications than their white counterparts. For every death, we have 70 near misses. And so as a result, there's like this sorority of sorts of everybody basically knows someone who's either died or had really, really, really difficult pregnancies and deliveries. We call that severe morbidity. And it's this phenomenon, certainly within the Black community, but throughout the United States.
Yeah, it gives me the chills. I mean, look, it's like you've used her legacy to actually inform and to do this work. And again, it's not political and it's really about everybody. So, thank you for sharing that and sharing your personal story there.
Well, we started the Black Maternal Health Caucus with the idea of ending our nation's maternal health crisis, because if you can improve the health care for those who are most impacted, you improve the quality of care for all moms, right? So we say that we're about saving moms' lives.
Yeah.
And I think that to be able to do it in that spirit, to honor Shalon in partnership with her mother, who started a foundation, is just really incredible. But unfortunately, you know, we're still hearing the news of these deaths, you know, within like the last 10 days. I don't know if you saw, Liz, that there was a cheerleader from Kansas City connected with Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift who died, and she had a stillbirth and then she died. And it's just devastating.
It is devastating. So thank you for the work you're doing and keep doing it so that we can actually see advances in female, in women's healthcare, but also in Black women's healthcare. It's crucial. So thank you. So I'm going to just skip back now to the beginning, because you did reference like that you grew up in your town. And what was it like? What was it like to grow up there besides feeling empowered because it was the 90s, you know, going to school? And like, what was special about your neighborhood, about your school, and about your family?
So my family's from Cleveland, Ohio. My parents met there and my dad got a job. And we were really, at least on my mom's side, the only ones that left Cleveland. And so they picked this town called Naperville outside of Chicago. And I remember growing up and there was a lot of farms. I went to an elementary school where, you know, we didn't get a Black teacher at that school. So I was probably in third grade. She taught in fifth grade and I didn't have her in fifth grade. There's one other Black kid in my class, Eric James. And I remember, I still remember now because we were like the only ones, you know, all these farms, it's very, very, very rural. I remember in first grade, there was a kid named Brian Book. And I thought he was so cool because he lived at a farm on Book Road and it was named after his family. And now, of course, that farm doesn't exist. It's a Walmart. But, you know, it was like that. So my community, the city of Naperville, has gone through tremendous growth over the last 30 years. Back then, it was not very diverse. It was pretty rural and it was comfortable. Everything was designed so that you didn't really have to leave. And
what did your parents do? What brought them there? Like, what was their field?
My dad is a classical pianist, but then wanted to support our family. And so he spent a career in finance. He got an MBA. He went to Northwestern. And then my mom worked for like a manufacturing company and she was a buyer. So she would always be working with suppliers and calling the factories in China and Mexico and, you know, doing that. And so mom pretty much always worked. And so we had lots of babysitters and went to daycare and kind of navigated that whole process.
And were your grandmother was involved in helping to raise you? Were you close with your grandmother?
My grandparents lived in Cleveland.
Okay.
So we would see them for holidays, but they weren't certainly like the early years. So maybe when I was one and two and family were very involved in childcare. But as soon as we left, we were basically out here in Illinois on our own.
Yeah. And did your parents have any advice that they gave you growing up, you and your sister, like on what you're supposed to do or things that they had learned in their life?
My mother would always say two things. The first was you only need one friend. And so middle school was hard. We moved a couple times. And so that was really disruptive. And I would always see these girls who had large groups of friends and was never really part of a friend group and felt kind of rejected and excluded in that way. And she would always say to me, "Lauren, you only need one friend and you have one friend. You have more than one friend. And so, you know, treasure the friendships that you have. You don't need to, you know, have this whole click thing." And the other was be a woman. And be a woman was like my mother's rallying cry to like dig deep and do the hard thing. So the dynamic between my mom and my dad is one where like my mom would do some of like the gross stuff. So like if there was, I remember there was once a time where there was like an animal that was stuck in, you know, part of our house.
Yes.
And like my mom would be the one to like capture and kill. You know, there's like a nest. My mom would be the one to do that. And I remember like in my first big girl apartment, there was a mouse and I was in Baltimore and I had to kill this mouse and then dispose of it. And my mom would be like, "Be a woman, Lauren. You got it. You can do it." And like just that be a woman instinct. I mean, so many pep talks since I've been in Congress. Like, be a woman, Lauren. You can do the hard thing.
Yeah.
And
it's like a mantra. Like when things are going rough, you can just say, "Be a woman." And it just gives you a strength that comes from within. I appreciate that.
That's right. Yeah. And for not just generations, but centuries, women have been doing the hard thing.
Yes.
And persevering.
Yeah.
And come from a long line. These boss women. And so I just like dig deep.
You have to own it. You got to own it. You got to own it and realize that you're enough and even more than that, you know? Can you talk a little bit about what Girl Scouts gave to you and what it meant to you to be a Girl Scout and how it helped you or helped you as to who you are today?
Yes. So I joined Girl Scouts as a Daisy in kindergarten and stayed in until my senior year of high school. It was a community of peers, high school girls from across my town, right? They weren't at my actual school, focused on doing projects and to achieve our individual goals, which was something that I didn't really get in school. This idea is something that was customized to meet my goals and interests. And so I got that from Girl Scouts. And so when I graduated, had earned my Gold Award, which is the highest award in Girl Scouting, and then was offered the opportunity to pay something like very minimum
to be a lifetime Girl Scout. So I paid this money as an 18-year-old and so stayed connected with Girl Scouts. So when I graduated from Hopkins, I finished graduate school. I was living in D.C. and working in government and had this big job that I loved, but I wanted to give back. And so I became a Girl Scout leader. Mm-hmm. And I said I didn't want the young girls because I don't play. That's what I tell people. I was never a babysitter. I don't play. But I wanted some girls who needed, you know, some mentoring and love and attention. And so they gave me a group of sixth grade girls in D.C., in Northeast D.C. Wow, we did puberty. We did high school. We did dating. I took them on their first airplane trip. We went down to Universal Orlando. We sold all the cookies. All went to college. All graduated from college. They were at my swearing in.
You're giving me the chance. Beautiful.
I love them yeah. so much.
Well, you know, you took a chance because what they say is you know, to teach or to mentor young teenagers is really one of the hardest things. You know, I know you said you don't play well, but that is a huge responsibility because it's such a tough time. And so to hear your story and to hear that then they came to your swearing in is really quite beautiful. You actually changed, you know, you helped and changed some lives. So I love that story. That's why people like yourself to hear your stories and then know that you're out there fighting in Congress. It's beautiful because it tells everybody that's listening that you're not doing it for a title or for a paycheck, but you're doing it really because it comes from your heart and from your soul. So thank you. Is there any advice that you gave to these young women? I know what your mom gave you, but did you continue that or did you give them any specific thoughts that you think that were from what you learned that you shared with them?
Well, our biggest thing was the idea of being a sister to every Girl Scout. So, you know, we had a pledge and the Girl Scout law, and part of it was to be a sister to every Girl Scout. And that was something that was tough for them because this idea of what sisterhood means. Sisterhood right. doesn't mean I have to like you. Sisterhood doesn't mean that we're going to be best friends. Sisterhood means that we are together, that we look out for one another, and that there's this like unbreakable bond. And even if, you know, we can't hang out all the time or, you know what I mean? Like all of that doesn't matter, that we have right. to show up and just honor that other person as their sister. That was tough, you know, seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade, when like the mean girls and that whole dynamic, yeah. it can really be disruptive, even in a small group like a Girl Scout troop. But I really emphasize that. And then I also brought in a lot of my girlfriends. So they got to see kind of us model that behavior. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a way that maybe they couldn't see in their moms or their, yeah. you know, their family members.
Yeah. No, it's quite inspiring. And I think it's just sort of a message that goes beyond teenage girls, like just about people that we don't all have to love each other or even really like, let's say, or have the same interests, but there's a mutual respect and there's a way you treat people and there's a kindness. And, you know, part of it is just listening sometimes mm-hmm. and not mm-hmm. having to just, you know, they say you got one mouth and two ears and you got to use it in those balance. And we sometimes forget that. And we just talk and we don't really listen. And
yeah,
I find that, you know, listening affords me a lot of opportunities to learn.
But also then creating a safe space if someone wants to share.
Exactly.
Right. Because yeah. sometimes without that baseline level of understanding, someone would never open up because they don't feel safe.
Right.
And so, but if you emphasize that this is a sisterhood and this, you know what I mean? Then no matter why someone came, they feel comfortable.
It's important. And I love that, but that you are able to give those girls that opportunity. And again, it's that safe space. I really like that as well. Okay. So now I'm going to ask you some questions that are still in your safe space, but that are just to get people to get to know you on some of your likes and however you want to answer them one word or explain. What's your favorite color?
I love Kelly green, like the bright green. And so I have this green coat that I wore my whole first campaign. That is my color. I love it so much.
I love it. It's a beautiful color. Okay. This one's a hard one. What is your favorite scent?
I like roses, like rose scent, yeah. like a floral, light floral.
Lovely. Mm-hmm. If you were to have one meal on a desert island or one meal that you could just send in, what would it be? What would be your like, oh my God, this is ideal.
I love French toast.
Okay.
I love strawberry cheesecake. And it can be real strawberries or that canned jelly strawberry.
Yeah.
Or it could be strawberry flavor cheesecake, like artificial strawberry in there. Doesn't matter. It's all delicious. Yes. So
and what good. do you put on your French toast? Strawberries?
Love strawberries. Real maple syrup, though.
Right.
I can't do the breakfast syrup anymore.
And who would you say is your biggest cheerleader?
Probably my parents.
Yeah.
My parents live in the district. They live like 5 minutes around the corner from me. And so every week when I get back from Washington, I go over to their house. It's like an hour and a half. My dad wants to go over everything that I said, you know, with Pelosi said, what Adam Schiff said, what Hakeem Jeffries said, what the president said, and then like go over everything that was on MSNBC that week and then just like do the full rehashing of everything that's occurred so that we can solve all the world's problems around the dinner table every week.
I love it.
They love this. And like they weren't even the most political people growing up, but like they have loved this congressional phase and meeting everyone that they see, you know. Has also been a delight. But they go hard for me outside of this Congress stuff. They just want me to be okay and be happy. I appreciate that.
That's great. No, it's wonderful. And that they love what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have time to exercise?
Well, I do. You know, I have been on this little journey. So one of the things, Liz, is that, and like, I feel like I should have known this as a nurse, but this whole like your body changes several times in adulthood thing. Yeah. Is real. Coming to Congress is like going to college and like the freshman 15 is a real thing. And so I like to do cycling classes. So I have a spin bike at home and a spin bike in DC and I use my Peloton app and you know, do my classes. I don't like the ones that are like, okay, you can do it. Let's go. I'm like the dig. You know what I mean? Like really intense and like really make sure you have a good workout. I love it.
And what's your playlist when you're doing it?
Hip hop.
Easy question. Where in the world have you never been, but you would like to go?
I want to go to Asia so badly. And I had like Codell invitations to go to India. And then like COVID happened and I couldn't go. And then I was invited to go to Japan this week and couldn't go. And I just like, I really want to go so badly. So that's on my list. I really don't care though. I love traveling. I am curious about people and their food and what they do in their countries. And I also, because of just my professional experiences, have learned that you don't have to have like 2 weeks to be able to just take off work and go travel, right? Like you can just, whatever period of time can be enriching and memorable. And so I will go for a weekend or go for a day. I mean, that sometimes sounds really wasteful, but sometimes that's all you have. And if you just stay home waiting to have a month to travel, I don't think you'll get there.
You miss out on a lot of opportunities. Yeah, no, I hear you. If you could say where you've been that you have said is, oh my God, one of the most amazing places, what would that be?
Mm. Okay. I love Paris. I love Paris. I love the food. I love the like really cheap corner cafe croissant, like not even like the high end, like really artisanal bakery, but just like that regular €1 croissant. Oh, incredible.
Well, can I say they're the best because those are what the people in the neighborhood are eating and they're not going to eat something that isn't great.
No, it's so good. And then you go to the regular Parisian grocery store and get their roasted chicken. Like their prepared roasted, it's so much better than ours. It's just like unreal. Okay. So love Paris food. New Orleans. It's like the same thing. Like in New Orleans, like I have a rule against like street food. You know what I mean? Like the taco stand. Like I just, my.
Not your thing.
I can't do it. I can't do it. Other people can. More adventurous eaters. But in New Orleans, like the gas station food is good. You know, like everything is just so good in New Orleans. And have you been to Lisbon? I love
Lisbon. I have been to Lisbon and I have eaten. What do you like there? Because I
just liked that that was a city that I went by myself and I felt so safe. I rode the train. I navigated, went all around. I just felt like that city was accessible as a single English speaking woman to be able to navigate as a tourist and have a great time. Like there's just like no problems. I've been a couple times and it's just really nice. I love it.
Yeah, no, I love Lisbon. Okay, so you're a passionate traveler, which I love.
Yes, and then can I do one more? I went to Johannesburg when I turned 30. I found a flight deal for $395 round trip. So I went for 3 days and had the best time. Walked with some lions and went to like one of those markets. Mm-hmm. I love going to those markets and getting like art and the African fabrics and all. Oh, it was just great. I loved South Africa.
Okay. Well, I've been inspired to do quicker trips and go yes. farther places. So thank
yes.
you.
Yes, yes, yes.
So my last question, which I've asked a lot of all the electeds, and you know, the answers have been very different, but you answer part of it through all the things that we've talked about. But my last question is, what does joy mean to you? What brings you joy? And then how, and I think partially through just who you are as a person, but also as a leader, how do you share that joy to inspire or bring other people up?
Well, healthcare days are my favorite days. And that's in Congress and outside of Congress. When I get to help people live healthy, well lives, like I've done what I came here to do.
Yeah.
And I think that the joy that I feel in doing that work, I can't even suppress it. Like I couldn't even hide it if I wanted to. It just pours out of me. And so that's how I share it with other people.
Yeah.
I have one of these faces that you know exactly what I'm thinking all the time. Even when I think I'm on my best behavior, everybody knows what I'm thinking. It's just really nice when I can just, you know, be candid and sincere and direct and channel that energy collectively into doing good. But then conversely, when I'm working on something that like doesn't bring joy, to still honor people and that issue when it's really important to them.
Yeah.
And that takes some discipline and focus. And some days I'm good at it and some days I'm not, but I try to really give it the same type of consideration as I would with a healthcare issue that animates me.
First, I want to say thank you because I love your answer. And the funny thing is that when I see you, I see this person who looks a little bit serious. And then when you smile, just like you are right now, you make it joyful to be with you. And I love your answers and I love talking to you and really just hearing a little bit more about where you come from and about like your passion for travel, but really your passion for people. Because at the end of the day, you know, you have made a very conscientious decision to help people through your leadership. And I know it's not always easy and I know that it's not always successful, but you keep pushing and you keep trying because I know that deep down inside that you are passionate about the work you do. And that to me is inspiring. So I just want to say thank you and just thank you for bringing joy to me today and bringing joy to so many people each and every day.
Thank you so much for having me and for creating this platform to just be a regular, nice, normal human being, right? And I think that some people kind of forget that that's what we bring to our work.
You're just a normal person, but a wonderful normal person. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Liz. Please join me every Tuesday for coffee to talk about heart and humanity with our elected leaders. Ciao.